You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Better Call Paul is a production of Lola Media. Say hi, Lola.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul Sarker from Better Call Paul. Just wanted to remind you that the show is intended for entertainment purposes only and is not legal advice. I am not your lawyer unless we separately agree for me to represent you, and the views expressed by Mesh and me are solely our own. Hey everyone, welcome back to Better Call Paul, the show where we discuss the legal and business side behind the scenes of Hollywood sports and entertainment. I'm your co-host, Paul Sarker.
And I'm your other co-host, Mesh Lakhani, founder of Lola Media, disappointed March Madness viewer. Paul, I think we both had a rough rough day.
I went to Duke, you went to UVA. UVA lost on Thursday, right?
Yeah.
Round of 64, and Duke lost in the round of 32. Real unfortunate, but I guess you can't win them all. It would have been crazy if the two teams sort of like met in the tournament and we could have done some sort of like, you know, live episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, such is sports.
Well, I think you are definitely a bigger fan than I am. I went to UVA. I appreciate it. It's always fun to watch from the tournament, but I know this one was probably more hurtful for you. I mean, I was bummed, but I was feeling bad for you when I was watching the game.
I feel bad, but it's like I've come to terms with it. There were years past where Duke was like a favorite all year, and then they happened to have some crushing defeat in the tournament. So this team was very young, and they were kind of under the radar until the last 2 weeks of the season, and then they put together like a 10-game win streak. And I thought, you know, anything could happen. I saw Obama pick them to win it all in his bracket, and they were playing really well, but they were missing one of their best players against Tennessee, and Tennessee was just a very physical, senior-laden team, and it was just too much to handle. But all in all, I think the season was a success, and I'm not bitter about it.
I mean, I think part of the fun of it is the potential. Like, you never really know who could win. So let's see what happens, and we'll be paying attention. Luckily, this morning won an Arsenal game. I'm an Arsenal fan, newish Arsenal fan, but I come from a group of friends who are diehard Arsenal fans, and Arsenal right now, again, won another match. I watched it this morning. They're sitting top of their table. So that's good news. And bad news, I would say, The Last of Us is over. That's kind of a bummer, but we got Succession coming next week. So there's a lot happening when it comes to watching stuff.
Yeah, there is a lot happening. And another treat for your ears out there. So I have a friend, Jonah Perlin, who's a law professor at Georgetown. Actually, I met him through a friend of mine who I went to Duke with, Adam Yaffe, great lawyer as well. And Jonah has this podcast called How I Lawyer, where he interviews sort of leaders in the legal profession, prominent lawyers, in-house folks, and I don't know, somehow I got on that list, so he interviewed me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it should be coming out in a couple weeks. It's an interesting take. It's not necessarily a news show, but a lot of his audience, because he's a law professor, is law students and junior lawyers, so it's trying to sort of give people practical tips on building a career and maybe helping them navigate what path they want to take as a lawyer, or it maybe outside of law as well. So it was interesting because I really enjoyed law school. And I think part of how we structure Better Call Paul, at least how I prepare for the show, is like I'm almost kind of preparing for like it's a law school class.
Yeah, yeah.
Or not that I'm a professor, but I think there is an academic angle to the show. And, you know, sometimes I'll say, hey, refer to episode 17 or whatever from season 1, because I don't want to repeat everything that I said, but it's also better for the audience because, like, we don't have time to do a deep dive on every topic, but things are sort of related. And sometimes in law school, you'll have a professor or whoever that'll be like, we're going to talk about this in 3 months, but I'm just going to do an overview. Or we'll say, we talked about this 2 months ago. We look back at your notes because it's all kind of interrelated.
Yeah.
And that's actually our first topic this week is if we're going to dive into an update from a story we talked about in episode 17 from season one, but it also relates to episode 208, section 230.
See, this is funny because I've always wondered, I'm like, where is he pulling, like, where is he actually writing these things down where he knows exactly which episode we've talked about one in? Because half the time you're right, like, when you say it, I'm writing it down as well. I'm like, oh, I forgot that we talked about it. Now it all makes sense to me why you do that.
Yeah. No, it's actually interesting because when I, obviously we live time in linear way, right? So episode one follows two, follows three. So we release episodes sequentially, but if you're a new listener, your phone goes backwards. So it gives you the most recent and then goes earlier automatically. So if you're just starting today, you're not going to know what I said in episode 17. Sure. So you'd have to skip to that. Anyway, in episode 17, we talked about VPN sites.
Yes.
And how they were hotbeds for copyright infringement. And you can go back to the episode if you want the detail, but essentially copyright infringement is a internationally estimated to be hundreds of billions of dollars of damages a year. And a big part of it is pirating content online, illegally downloading, streaming, watching movies and television shows, not necessarily music as much because we have all these digital streaming applications that people pay $10 a month to listen to as much music as they want or whatever. So it's digital streaming services. And so we have those. So it's not really a huge problem for music, although it was maybe a decade and a half ago or a decade ago. It's still a problem for video. And we talked about how there's websites generally under Section 230, which we talked about in episode 208, have immunity for content right. that people post on their platforms.
Right.
And there is an exception. There's a couple for like sex trafficking and other things. And there's one exception for copyright infringement. So if you're a platform and someone puts infringing content on there and you are notified, you have to take it down. That's called the DMCA. And the other thing, it's a safe harbor. So if you comply with that and you're a platform, then you're not going to be sued as long as you're complying. The other thing about that is if you identify a repeat violator on your platform, you have to disable their account. You have to penalize them. So these VPN sites, some of them were turning a blind eye. They were intentionally not tracking the IP addresses of people that were illegally allowing users to download content, right? Like these illegal torrent sites and streaming sites. We're using VPNs as kind of a shield to get around legal liability, and various states were trying to pass laws against that. And so that was the episode 17. And there was one particular lawsuit we talked about, which was Liquid VPN,
right,
which is
right.
operated in Florida. It's owned by Charles Muzinski, and it's operated by his entity, 1701 Management LLC. So this guy, he did not hire a lawyer. He represented himself. He lost, but 1701 Management LLC had no money.
Right.
So the studios that were suing him, they got a $15 million default judgment because I guess he didn't answer any questions in time and he didn't proffer a defense. So he got a default judgment against him. But I guess his strategy was to have 1701 Management LLC be broke.
And that's kind of the point of an LLC, right? They can't go after him.
Right.
They can only go after the LLC.
Well, in limited circumstances, you can go after the shareholders. It's this concept called piercing the corporate veil. And so the whole fundamental principle of corporate law is that we want to have limited liability to encourage people to take risks and invest in things.
Sure.
And so we should be able to create these things called corporations or LLCs or various entities and allow them to own property and enter into agreements and be liable for their own actions. And their shareholders are liable to the extent of their ownership, but not personally liable. There are some exceptions, which is if you use a company and you undercapitalize it and you don't adhere to corporate formalities and you basically use it as your own piggy bank, or if you run a company basically as a shell to avoid liability, in rare circumstances, judges can sort of pierce the corporate veil and go after the shareholders. So in the case of Charles Muzinski, what happened in Florida this week was he also owns a waste management company,
right.
which does have money, and it's called Waste Resources. And the judge is saying, okay, well, You didn't show up to defend yourself in this VPN lawsuit, and 1701 Management LLC doesn't have any money, but Waste Resources does have money, so they can enforce their judgment against that entity. And he hasn't responded yet.
And is that just simply because his name is like a owner on both?
So basically, I don't know if he's the sole owner or the controlling shareholder, but he is listed as the owner right. of Waste Resources LLC and also 1701 Management LLC. And so it's essentially like there's no money in 1701 Management LLC because that's the company that's likely to get sued. There is some money in Waste Resources LLC. And so the judge says, well, okay, well, Waste Resources LLC, you should be responsible for this judgment as well.
What's interesting here is that, I mean, the two things that I find interesting. One, first of all, you have a guy who's willing to allow people to illegally download movies, which is already a huge risk on its own. And then the second risk is you don't show up in court or get a lawyer when you're getting sued for $15 million. That just seems like this guy's taking ultra risk constantly.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's a bit of a gambler. I mean, I don't know him, but I assume this might be one of those things where he maybe didn't want to spend a bunch of money on lawyers for a case that he didn't think he was going to win. And he was thinking, maybe I'll just shut the company down and they'll have a judgment that they can't enforce because there's no money there. He'd probably be surprised that they're going after his other company.
He probably wasn't expecting that, given, you know, when people think of an LLC, it's like, oh, you know, limited to this company versus anything else.
But to your point, he did have an opportunity to respond. He didn't. So he didn't answer the questions. He didn't show up to the hearing.
I guess if I'm like, one, I've been caught with something that I know is clearly illegal, and then two, it's a pretty big, hefty fine of $15 million. I don't know. Maybe this guy, I mean, God knows what this guy's thinking. Maybe he's like, you know what? I've got to bounce now. Like, they're going to come after him one way or the other. I mean, so what happens in this case of, this guy hasn't responded and he's got a $15 million fine. Like, what happens next potentially?
So if they're going against Waste Resources LLC, to the extent Waste Resources LLC has $15 million in assets, they can enforce the judgment, right? They can get liens and other things. If they don't, then they could force the companies into bankruptcy, and that would be like a whole restructuring, potentially a sale, where the plaintiff in the suit would become essentially creditors and try to pick apart the assets and get whatever they can from them.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that sounds fair, given, you're not supposed to be doing a business like that, and why take the risk? So I guess we'll see what happens with this guy.
Yeah, I mean, there was probably a couple steps along the way where he could have shut down the website or taken down repeat infringers and this and that. And I think I, as an intellectual property lawyer, am sympathetic to content companies wanting to protect their rights and to go after these sites that, I mean, as we talked about in episode 17, there are valid purposes for VPNs, but you also can't use them to sort of completely operate above the law. So I think in this case, the guy should have lost. And if he's got the resources, he should pay the amounts.
Yep, I agree. And to end on this, one thing I would recommend is if people are interested in seeing the emergence of Spotify and how that came to be as a business during this time of legal downloading, The Playlist is a really great show on Netflix. It's based on, I think, Spotify Untold, which was a book that is about the creation of Spotify during that time. And if you're interested in learning about that, it's actually a really, really good show.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that.
I think you'd like it a lot. There's a lot of legal stuff in it. Each episode is the viewpoint of different members of the team. So it's Daniel Ek tells his story, the musician tells her story, and then one of the lawyers tells her version of the story.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think you'd like it. It's really good. After a while, it's kind of like, okay, this gimmick's getting a bit old because they keep giving you a different version of it. But the cool thing about it is that it just keeps going through the whole story. It's not like just the first few months. It's you get to see this company become a public company and all the different things that it went through.
How many, was it multiple seasons? Was it one season?
No, it was one season, and it was something like 8 episodes. Episodes or something like that. So you're getting like the record executive's point of view, you're getting the musician's point of view, you're getting blah, blah, blah. And it was done really well. And I think it was done in Sweden. So it's like a Swedish show on Netflix. So highly recommend that. But let's take a break and let's talk about a part of the movie business that could actually make some money and change the business around. Okay, Paul, so there's been some plans around changing ticketing in movie theaters, AMC leading the charge with tier ticketing prices, i.e. making sure that like the tickets are not just one price, they're priced differently based on where you're sitting. This is going into actual process this week. I have actually tested this out during this week at an AMC theater. I'm going to go watch Scream. And initially, there's been uproar about this. Like, oh my God, the movie theater, like, how can they do this to us? It's basically like going to a basketball game or going to a Taylor Swift concert, like or even Broadway. Closer you are, in theory, better seats cost more. In this case, it's seats that are within that. We all know the best seats in the movie theater, right? It's like the kind of middle, right? Like it's the middle, right? And then the middle. And like, there's a range where you're like, we want seats here. Nobody wants seats off to the side. Nobody wants the seats up front. And they're going to be charging $2 extra for this. They're calling like streamlined view, which we all know what are the best seats in the house. And they're charging $2 extra plus tax for you to get that. But at the same time, if you're an AMC, whatever their loyalty program is, they'll give you a discount on the very front seats, and then they give a discount on matinees. And I actually witnessed this today. Scream tickets matinee were like half price off, but you could also be potentially like paying extra to get the better seats. It's going to be interesting to see how this works out, but they're basically saying this is like, well, there's inflation, ticketing prices go up. We have to basically make some money back somewhere. I have my thoughts as a moviegoer, but I would love to hear what your thoughts are.
So that's a great summary. So it's called Sightline AMC, right?
That's Sightline. That's what it's
calling it. And are you a AMC Stubbs member?
No. And it's the only time I started recently going to an AMC. There's one in Flatiron. Love it. It's like they've just changed all the seats. And it was the first time where I was at the back of the line of the concession stand, where it was the only time where I was like, I should probably become a loyalty member here just so I could skip the line.
I think if you're a Stubbs member, then you don't get the $2 surcharge even for the good seats.
Oh, I see.
I think they waive it if you have the loyalty plan, the pay one.
Yeah. And if you're a loyalty member, that's how you get the discounted tickets that are up front as well.
Right.
So they're basically trying to get you to become a member.
It's an extra value add for the members. But my initial reaction is I'm with the internet on this. I'm not a fan of it, but I see why. I think when I first read about it, I think if they announced it in February, I was like, okay, that sounds smart. It sounds creative. It's like a way to drive their subscription product. It's also differentiated pricing is something that exists in, as you said, a lot of ticketed industries like airplanes, cruises, yep, trains. It also exists in entertainment like Broadway, concerts,
yeah,
sporting events. But the thing about those events, as I thought more about it and with transportation, is there's this equivalence of supply and demand, and there tends to be more demand so you can sort of differentiate your price offerings to your consumers. And there's also a resale market for concerts and sporting events. And there's just more of an equilibrium between supply and demand. So I get it. You're looking for ways to sort of increase the bottom line without raising the price on everyone. But I thought, okay, is this alienating the wrong person? Because the movie industry has been experiencing declines, but predominantly because of demand, not because of price falling.
Right.
So going back to 2003, right, the industry sold 1.5 billion tickets in the US. It was 1.3 billion before the pandemic, and then it was only 800 million last year.
Right.
So if you can see demand is basically half of what it used to be 20 years ago, the only reason revenue had been flat was because prices have been going up.
Right.
But
right,
there's a lot more competition for people's entertainment. And historically, theaters were kind of the everyman's, like a cheap form of entertainment meant, yeah, to be sort of accessible to everyone. And once you start trying to make it like a premium product, I think what you do is you alienate the loyal fans that are still going to theaters. So I don't know if I love it, but I think it's too early to say whether it's successful.
I agree.
But I don't know how many movies there are in a typical week or month where there's so much demand that people are going to be like, oh, I want this seat, therefore I'll pay a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think it only applies to shows after 4 p.m. I could be wrong about that.
You're actually right. It's shows after 4 p.m., hence why, you know, if you watch a show before 3 p.m., you get a matinee discount. And I thought it was interesting from the standpoint of the only people I know who have a loyalty program with a movie theater is AMC. I don't really know people who have it for other movies. I mean, granted, I haven't asked a bunch of people. And so I wonder if they're leaning into the fact that there are quite a few like stub members and, you know, they want to focus on them potentially. I thought I was going to be way more annoyed. I thought I was going to see something like, oh my God, this is going to be $5 extra. This is going to be $7 extra. My favorite seat is going to be this much. And like the $2, it's kind of like the equivalent of when you're on an airline and, you know, they make those preferred seats. They're all like an extra $50 or whatever it might be. I didn't hate it. I thought $2 was not that terrible to get good seats. I've actually always wondered why, you know, it's the same price to get some of the worst seats in the house and the best. So we'll see how it plays out from like maybe turning people away from wanting to watch the movie. I did do another experiment that I thought was interesting. I started going around the different theaters and playing around with ticketing prices. So we were looking at like Regal for some of the movies, and the difference between Creed 3 and Shazam, which just came out recently. There's a sequel to the first Shazam movie, and then obviously Creed 3 is the third installment. They were $21. And then to watch 65, which is the new Adam Driver movie about dinosaurs that hasn't gotten the best reviews, and then to watch Scream 6. The reviews were like 35% on Rotten Tomatoes. 60. I really wanted to watch this movie, man. Yeah. I'm a little bummed out that it's not. I really wanted another.
It struck me as silly, but.
It struck me as a potentially better version of After Earth, and which was already not a great movie.
Or a worse version of Jurassic Park.
Or you know, I will say this, there could be nothing worse than Dominion Park, Jurassic Park. That might be the worst dinosaur movie ever made.
Don't see it.
There's not even dinosaurs in this movie. It's killer cicadas. That's what they went with. So maybe 65 is better, but 65 and Scream 6, or I don't know if we're on 6 or 7 yet.
6, I think.
It's 6, right? Which I'm actually watching today. It's 6. They were $19 in comparison to the $21. And they're both, I was trying to figure out whether the theaters were different, because obviously different theaters are more expensive. You have 3D, you have the reserve seating, you have the stadium seating, you have the RPX. But in this case, I think they were charging more for the more in-demand movies. And so I'm curious just to watch how this all unfolds, because it's interesting.
And listen, I get it from the perspective of a business owner. You're looking for ways to squeeze a couple pennies or dollars out of a product without increasing your cost and maybe provide some value. I get the spin. I get the rationale. I just don't know if the solution is to raise prices effectively.
Yeah.
Because to me, and you know, I was an econ major, but I'm not an econ expert. It seems like another way to increase demand would be to lower price. And if part of the problem is you have these theaters that are empty most of the time, maybe it's because they're too expensive. Or maybe people are frustrated with the cost of popcorn and soda. And they're like, some people really love the movie going experience like you, and they are less price sensitive, so they're going to keep doing it. But there might be other people that are like, why am I going to take my family? It's going to be $110. We can just
watch a movie at home.
Watch a movie at home, and that pays for like 6 months of Netflix or something.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say, as someone who loves the movie theater and I try to watch a lot of movies, there's not many great movies to watch in the theater. And that's kind of my problem.
Well, that's the other thing, is that the demand has fallen so much that a lot of studios now are producing less content for theaters.
Right.
And they're focusing more on their streaming products, because you have to split every dollar with the theater, right? So every ticket. And that's another side of this equation. MoviePass, I remember when Jess and I first started dating, she was a loyal MoviePass person because she loves going to the theaters. And that was like one price, all you can see, sort of like buffet style. And I was like, how can they make money on that? But then I realized that if the theaters are mostly empty, then that's how they're making money.
I mean, and it's also, it's a balance of all that, plus streaming, plus everything that's out right now, plus... Look, 65, if I didn't know that it had a 35% or 45% on Rotten Tomatoes, I would have gone to see it in the theater. I mean, I know we've always looked at like movie reviews, but Rotten Tomatoes has made it more like, okay, if this, people have a threshold, right? The audience score has to be above a certain level, you know, or over the critic score, I would say. Audience score matters more.
And not even, and even for the time, right? Like money aside, it's also, are you going to spend 2 hours watching it if it has a really low score?
Yeah, but I'll tell you this. Scream 6 has not only a good critic score, it's got a 90, it's like something like 92% audience score. And I will say that I'm a big Scream fan, and the last one was so good. And now you got Jenna Ortega, who's like in the new one. She's a big star. I'm excited to go watch this in the theater. And I'm specifically like watching movies in theaters where I know there's going to be a bit more, the audience is a bit more engaged. I like those theaters where I want people screaming at the screen. I want people like yelling. And so let's see. I'm hoping it to be the case for me, for us to watch this movie in that environment. So let's see. But we'll find out whether this works or not for the theaters. Well, let's take a break, Paul, and let's get back with Mr. Tiger Woods, y'all.
So, Mesh, wow, this is a jam-packed episode. So, Tiger Woods, if you ask me, best golfer of all time, although there may be some debate about that, billionaire, child prodigy, golf prodigy, won 82 PGA Tour events, 15 majors, the list goes on and on. He's no longer really a competitive golfer in the sense that he had this really brutal car accident a couple years ago. He was on a bunch of pills, messed up his leg. And he said after that, after the surgery, he could have died. So he was lucky to be alive. After they reconstructed his leg, he was like, listen, my days of playing every week or in like a lot of events are over. Like I'm going to be able to play and make it around a course a couple times and I'll never be the player I was. So he probably won't continue to be an elite golfer, but he's still a big draw. And
yeah,
you know, we discussed how Liv was willing to offer him something like $800 million to join their tour. Anyway, he's in the news this week because it's actually a very interesting story.
Yes, very.
It sounds like a bad breakup, but there's a legal angle to this too. So his ex, Erica Herman, who, just so you know a little bit of background, she was an undergrad at UCF when they met. She was working at a bar. They met and they sort of started, maybe like sparks flew or whatever. He eventually opened up a restaurant in Jupiter, Florida and hired her to be the GM. And then they started this relationship and he asked her to move in with him at his house in Jupiter Island, Florida. And apparently the relationship ended and she filed a lawsuit in October claiming that he created an oral tenancy agreement under Florida law with him, or with actually the trust that owns the house, and that he breached it, or the trust breached it, by ending the relationship. She was expecting to live there for 11 years and she only lived there for 6. So she's suing for $30 million, which is the reasonable estimate of 5 years of renting that house.
Right, wow.
The other thing, which is interesting, the legal side of it, is before their relationship started, Tiger made her sign an NDA. And he's like, I'm a public figure. He had already been divorced and his wife of 6 years, Ela Nordegren, divorced him. There was like a whole public thing where she, I guess, smashed his car with a golf club and she found out he had been cheating multiple times. Many times.
And those all came out too, right? Like a lot of people aired his dirty laundry.
Yeah, it wasn't like sexual assault or any coercion or anything. He was just like text. Promiscuous.
Yeah.
He doesn't dispute that he slept around a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we can debate whether the pressure and the culture in which he was raised and his dad, I think, was a philanderer as well. And, you know, the environment and all that, you know, being a child prodigy and all that, the amount of work he had to put in. So whatever, he's got some demons. And anyway, he makes Erica sign an NDA at the start of their relationship. And now she's trying to invalidate that. And the NDA also has an arbitration clause. So it's like any disputes between us have to be arbitrated. So you can't sue me in court. It's got to go through private confidential arbitration. And her lawyers are claiming that the NDA is not enforceable because of the Speak Out Act, which was passed by Congress last year, saying that NDAs which pertain to sexual harassment or sexual assault aren't enforceable. And she's also claiming that forced arbitration clause is not enforceable because there's an exception to the federal statute that deals with sexual assault, sexual harassment. So the thing that Tiger's lawyers are responding and they're saying, okay, well, in the 6 years they were dating, she never raised anything regarding sexual assault, sexual harassment. She never filed any complaints. She never called the police. There was never any allegations that that would have happened. So their position is she's using this narrow exception to try to say that the NDA is no longer valid and to try to say that she doesn't have to arbitrate. She can sue in court.
My question is, do you think that her lawyers doing this is to kind of push or leverage to come to some type of like private agreement behind the scenes because he doesn't want all this stuff. Like the more people are talking about something like this in public, it's like he's probably like, look, I don't even want people to even know that there's anything happening in a legal manner. Like, let's just kind of come up with some settlement here. Because from what I read, it seemed that she's upset that she was tricked into leaving Florida mansion. Yeah.
Did you hear this? Did you read this?
I'm reading it. Like I actually took the quote from it. If you don't mind reading, from Yahoo News. It was required to support her case against the Jupiter Island Irrevocable Homestead Trust that owns Woods' home, whereby she claims she was wrongly tricked into leaving the Florida mansion they shared for 6 years to go on vacation, only to be told at the airport that she was not allowed to return after they broke up in October.
Nuts. allegedly, Tiger's employee said she should go on a vacation. When she gets to the airport, they're like, we changed the locks. You can't go back. And she's like, F this. I'm suing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, why not?
Well, because she signed an agreement that says she has to arbitrate.
Right.
So she signed a contract saying that all disputes had to be arbitrated. Under federal law, the Federal Arbitration Act, Section 9 of the U.S. Code, all agreements to arbitrate are enforceable as long as two parties agreed and whatever, it's an enforceable contract. There's an exception for sexual harassment and sexual assault. And if a judge can decide whether or not the exception is valid, but if it doesn't fit in that exception and you both parties agree to arbitrate, then that's the deal. And so arbitration has some advantages to the court system. One is it's typically faster. It's also confidential. And some people think it's cheaper, although that is a gray area because arbitration is now getting very expensive. The point is Tiger's a sophisticated party. She's a sophisticated party. Apparently she wanted to be a lawyer. She agreed to arbitration. And now she's trying to say that this arbitration clause is not enforceable because my claims relate to sexual harassment. But really, it seems like the substance of her claims are like the breach of, or it's really whether or not she had a tenancy agreement for the house. And if she did, whether that was breached, not necessarily whether sexual harassment.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking her lawyer is probably saying, well, I want a public trial. I want this to get in front of a jury. I don't want this to be in front of an arbitrator because it's going to be a tough case for me to win.
Right.
So how can I do that? Let me find all the different potential avenues to get around this contract that requires her to be silent and to pursue arbitration.
And the issue there is that according to new court docs, there's no evidence of any sexual harassment or abuse. There's nothing been filed, right? And so the only way that it could be left.
And if you're her, you're like, well, I had an NDA. I didn't know what I could say. I was like unsure about what I was allowed to come forward with or not.
Right.
But he's saying, listen, he invited her as a guest. There was no agreement. They were in a relationship for 6 years. She didn't have a lease. They never had any sort of indefinite or 10-year or whatever arrangement. And the relationship is over.
Right, right. I think what I was surprised by was that I didn't even know there could be so much legal back and forth when you're essentially just dating someone long term. Like they're not married.
Well, when you're dating a billionaire, I guess it's never that simple, right?
Yeah. No, not at all.
It gets more complicated because he started a restaurant and he hired her as the GM of that restaurant. Does that make her an employee of one of his entities? Right. Is there like a labor and employment angle to this? Is it purely just a relationship issue? Like, I don't know, Tiger. He's got himself into another mess.
I know. It's like, dude, just, I mean, how many houses do you have? Like, just let her have the house.
I mean, this is a really nice house. This is
fair enough.
12-acre house with... It's got one side on the beach, another side's on the sound. We were just in Florida last weekend. I mean, like a house like this, you wouldn't want to part with necessarily easily.
Right. Or maybe she's allowed one section of the house and he doesn't have to see her again, right?
Oh yeah. He'd probably have to see her. But it's got like a golf course.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I think there was the Vince Vaughn, Jennifer Aniston movie, like The Apartment or something?
Yes,
where
they
tried
not
to see each other and they were sharing an apartment. That would be funny. But when I was reading about like duped her into taking a vacation, she gets to the airport and they're like, so he probably had been asking her to leave for a while.
And he had to come up with some elaborate plan to get her out of the house.
And to be fair, These are allegations. We're not saying any of this happened. We're just recounting what we've read in the news.
And also, if there are new docs that show evidence, of course, we'll cover it, right? It's important to say right now, as if where we are in this case, is that there is no evidence here.
I mean, Tiger's position is there shouldn't be a case. It should be an arbitration. Right. You can submit your claims. And then the difference between an arbitration and a court system is that if you have a jury trial, you could get 12 of your peers who, you know, there might be people that take her side, not necessarily on the legal aspect of it, but just they think Tiger is an a-hole or whatever. And and they're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to just enforce the instructions that they are given and weigh the evidence that's presented. But, you know, it's a little bit of a jump ball when you're in front of a jury. And when you're in front of an arbitrator, it's a little bit more cut and dry. And it's probably someone that it's been mutually selected as an expert on either landlord-tenant or relationships or whatever. He's going to be like, well, when did he ask you to leave? And it's not necessarily good. She probably doesn't think she'll get a great result. So that's why she's doing this.
Yeah, imagine if there was like a real world edition of Tiger Woods and like with a whole cast of characters like this and they're going into confessional.
I'm thinking a Better Call Paul spinoff show.
Like, yeah.
You know, we'll get Tiger
all
on,
the legal
we'll get
stuff
Erica
that he
on.
Goes through. Yeah, this guy just continuously gets himself into some very interesting situations when it comes to women.
Yeah.
So
no, I know. But I wonder if this was going to inspire other people to end relationships that way.
Tricking people.
Into taking a vacation?
Yeah, I mean, just reading it, when I'm reading it out loud, I laughed to myself because I was, you know, this was like a serious article.
But let me ask you this. Why not let her go on the vacation, then when she gets back, tell her?
Yeah, that's what I was also confused about. Like, you're that.
Then she's relaxed. She's in a better mood.
You can change the locks or whatever you need to do.
Maybe he never even booked the flight. That would piss me off.
I think that if you're going to at least send her on vacation.
Yeah.
Or she can pay for her own vacation. But, dude, you can't. Like, to trick someone into going on vacation only to do a switcheroo.
Well, I don't know if the vacation happened or didn't happen. But according to the allegations, she was at the airport before she had started the vacation. And then we're like, oh, wait, there's no vacation, but you can't go back to that.
I would be also pissed if I was her.
Right. And I probably would have asked to see like my boarding pass.
Yeah, well, I guess it would have been a digital. It'll be waiting for you on your app.
Or maybe she flies private.
I mean, one could assume. Who knows? There's so many other questions here. I'm sure that it'll come out. Either more stuff is going to come out or this thing is going to wrap
up.
Well,
he has a pretty ironclad NDA from what I've read online.
I would only assume so based on what he's been through.
Yeah.
So let's follow the story and we will report back if there's anything new here. Because who doesn't want a little Tiger Woods in an episode of BCP? But Paul, this was great. This was multiple breakdowns this week. So
yeah,
action-packed episode. I'll let you know how Scream was and let you know my experience at the movie theater, folks.
There's nothing AMC could do to alienate Mesh. We know that.
No. You know why I really love AMC? It's not because of the seats. It's because they have the make-your-own drink machine, like the where you can select every different version of Coke.
And all the different flavors.
And the reason why is because I can't drink caffeine. For those who must know, I like caffeine-free Coke. It's the only theater that has caffeine-free Coke, and that is why I like going to AMC.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember seeing caffeine-free Coke like decades ago, but certainly not anytime
No,
recently.
It's great. And throw a little caffeine-free cherry Coke in that mix. I'm a happy man, and I'll let you know how it is. But that's our show for this week, folks. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you choose to listen. Better Call Paul is produced and edited by Valentino Rivera and assistant producer Lisa Sanders. Have a great week.
Thanks, everyone.